Hello, my name is Claire Armitstead and I'm the literary editor of The Guardian. One of the most pleasurable parts of my job is longlisting for the Guardian First Book Award, now in its 10th year. This year we had the biggest entry ever, 170 books, ranging from fiction to poetry, history to travel and memoir. Six reading groups across the country had the job of reducing that number to five, and they came up with a short list of three novels and two works of non-fiction. Each week, in the run-up to the prize on December the 3rd, we'll be all interviewing a shortlisted author. And this week, it's Steve Toltz, whose novel, A Fraction of the Whole, narrowly missed winning this year's Booker Prize. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, thank you.
Now, this is quite a contentious title, isn't it, A Fraction of the Whole, given that it's 720 pages long?
It's true. It's made it certainly open for a lot of jokes.
Is it? Was that deliberate? Was that a joke that you were aware of when you gave it that title?
No, not at all. Look, it was also, I mean, it has obviously some story resonance and thematic resonance, but as well it was a kind of a note to self that, I will write other things and perhaps I should stop.
Not that you will cut down on your available material.
No, not at all.
So tell us a bit about it. Give us an idea of what the story is, or what the many stories are.
The main one is that it's about a young man whose father is the most despised man in Australia, and his uncle is the most adored man. And he's sort of torn between these two figures. You know, in Australia we have criminals that we adore and certain criminals that we despise. And so I've kind of put that in a context of a family. You know, in Australia quite recently I was in a club and I went to this concert and I saw a poster for Chopper Reed, who they've made a film of him. He's kind of a famous self-confessed murderer, and he was basically going to be performing at a club with another man named Roger Rogerson, who's a famous corrupt police officer. Chopper Reed was on stage selling hand-signed axes and photographs of people that he'd killed, and then Roger Rogerson came on and told stories. And you know, it's a very peculiar thing that I'm not sure of many countries that could do that, really celebrate and enjoy criminals in that way.
So Martin, the narrator's father, who is the one who is hated, actually starts out with good intentions usually, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. You know, he's a misanthropic philosopher who thought himself into a corner. He doesn't like the world, but he wants to improve it. And every time he does try, it usually ends up quite badly for him.
So, for example, the suggestion box. Describe that a little bit.
The suggestion box, Martin has the idea of how to improve the people of his town by building a suggestion box and inspiring people to achieve higher things for their neighbours and for their town. But very quickly, people start putting in suggestions and things about how much they hate the people that they're living side by side with, and eventually Martin's own family become a constant target. It all unravels very, very badly for them.
So it's a sort of satire of the unpleasantness of the normal person, is that right?
Well, I don't know if I meant it to be a satire rather than a depiction. Optimism isn't very funny, whereas, you know, optimism in literature is only funny when you're laughing at a character, whereas pessimism is generally funny, and extreme pessimism is extremely funny.
Now, one critic described it as wild and whirling, and another said that you were profligate with your stories, and any one of Martin's anecdotes would make a decent full-length novel. Do you think there's any truth in that?
There probably is some truth in that. You know, I mean, when I conceived the book, I didn't kind of start where it starts now, is sort of at the beginning, and I'm in love with stories too much, and I really liked my characters, and it felt that it would be unfair to them to just summarize something. And so each anecdote, in order to fully explain the character, needed to become a story of its own. And you know, look, that's just, for better or worse, is my style. I can't really do much about it.
But you don't have that many characters for such a big novel, do you? They keep popping up again.
Yeah, which is why, you know, thankfully, if I can sort of try and be objective about my own book, I think it is not as difficult to read as a number of very big books, because, you know, I'm not spending 7 pages describing the furniture of a room. There's not a lot of description, and it does focus on a few characters, but you know, we go inside their heads, and it's, you know, it's there is, you know, some ideas and philosophy and all of that kind of thing, but it's not like a big Russian novel where there are 7,000 characters who all kind of whose names sound very, very similar.
Ideas like a do-it-yourself guide for aspiring criminals. I love that one. With chapters such as Motiveless Crime, Why? You must have had fun writing it.
Yeah, look, that was really fun. In that situation, I had to be very disciplined to not get carried away and write a whole book of it, really. It's just one of those things that occurred to me, and I find it, you know, very mysterious that it doesn't already exist.
So now tell us how you came to write. What's your background?
I went to university, and then afterwards I kind of, I guess you could say, floated around. I did a number of different jobs. I worked as a switchboard operator in a radio station, as a cameraman, as I was an extra for a number of years, you know, being kind of body number four in a hospital bed in a hospital drama. I was, you know, a private investigator for a short period of time. I was a data entry clerk. So I did a number of different jobs, and but all at the same time, I was kind of writing and writing stories and writing actually as a way to try and supplement my income, because, you know, these jobs I was making were all minimum wage, and short story competitions would come up, and a radio play competition or a poetry competition. And so I would, you know, that writing was always my default hobby. So I would write that. And then because I was changing jobs so often, the only thing I was doing consistently from year to year was writing. And so I just kind of veered into being a writer. And then some of the stories that I had written and were rejected seemed to me to be the great beginning and ending of a novel, and I just thought I'd fill in the middle, and that's how this book started.
Yeah, that takes some confidence to take rejection like that and bounce back. Where does that confidence come from?
There's a fine line, I think, between, you know, confidence and denial and stupidity. I wasn't very good at anything else, and this was the only thing that I was enjoying, and I guess it's more stubbornness than confidence.
And your parents, were they writers?
No, God, no.
What did they do?
My parents work in law, both of them.
So lawyers. You had no background of writing?
No, none at all, other than, you know, as I said, default hobby. So, you know, that's what I was doing when I was kind of 12 and 14, and I don't come from a long line of writers.
Now, you're from Australia. You're currently in Paris.
Yes.
Are you going to become a European? Are you staying here? Have you been wooed over by your success?
Well, I've been, you know, perhaps more coerced by my French wife. Might have something more to do with it. Throughout, I guess, this year and next year, my book will be coming out in a couple of different European territories, and Australia is just so far. So this was kind of a good opportunity to be here, really.
Steve, thank you very much for coming in, and very good luck.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Bye.